Welcome to Story of a Storyteller. I'm your host, Connor Braden. This is the show where I found out all about the ins and outs of the lives of storytellers of all kinds. You can find my free novella, The Stolen Dagger, episode show notes, links to all sorts of amazing books, and more at connorbraden.com/podcast. Enjoy!
So, hello and welcome to Story of a Storyteller, the podcast where I'll be talking to and getting to know authors and storytellers of all different types. Today, my guest is... I don't have a guest. Oh, what am I going to do? That'd be weird. Okay. Today's guest is Connor J. Braden. Oh, this is weird. Connor is a teacher, author, and podcaster. His first novel, The Longest Night, was published independently in 2019, with its companion novella, The Stolen Dagger, being published in 2020. Today, Connor talks about his childhood in New York, Sligo, and Manor Hamilton, the passions that always led him to reading and writing and storytelling, and what it was that finally made him decide to write a book. He also talks about his podcast, which you're listening to, and his writing inspirations in life, and how he manages to so many irons in the fire. Okay, enough talking about myself in the third person. Today's episode is about me. I'll be dividing the episode into four sections. First, my background, then writing, the future, and then I have a Q&A section at the end. If you're interested in one particular section over another, just go into the show notes and there'll be a description and time codes in there. You can skip ahead. So in my background, I'll be talking about my love of reading and writing, what made me want to be a teacher and a writer and a podcaster. Next is the writing. I'll talk about how I got inspired to write, what made me think of The Longest Night and its influences, and what I'm writing now. I also have a few questions from story lovers about this, and then I'll talk about the podcast, why it started up, what it's like to run one, my process from beginning to end. And after that, and this is the bit that's exciting for me, I'll be sharing the future plans of both my writing and podcasting crew. Finally, I took all the great questions I got from Instagram and Twitter and all that, and I am answering them all at the end. So, anyway, on with the show proper. I'm Connor J. Braden. The J stands for John, after my father's father. Although Connor is a common enough name, which it really is. There's always been at least one other Connor in every class at every level I've in my own education. So brief shout out to Connor Conway, McGowan, Malloy and McShane. Anyway, I'm not even all that unique. Back during the first lockdown in 2020, I was followed on Instagram by a man also named Connor Braden. His friend found my website and book, sent it to him going, "Is this you?" He followed me, found out it wasn't him, obviously. And then he sent the website to his family group chat saying, "Hey, this was my lockdown project. I wrote a book," which is a joke I fully endorse. So anyway, even though my name is not common enough, even though my name is very common, I was actually named after the main character of a book. Trinity by Leon Uris was what my dad was reading around the time I was born. It's a historical fiction novel that follows the life of Connor Larkin, who grows up in an Ireland under English rule, and it really shows how bad life could be for Catholics from the late 1800s to the early 1900s. I really recommend the book, no matter who you are or where you're from. My dad gave it to me as a Christmas present a few years ago. It is huge, though. It's massive. The only book I've read that's bigger than it is Stephen King's It, so you've been warned. Highly recommend it, though. I was born in 1989 to two Irish illegal immigrants in New York. My dad was running a pub and my mom was an office worker. My dad had a bar in Bay Ridge in Brooklyn called Napper Tandy's, named after an Irish revolutionary. Are you seeing a pattern? And as a result, I was nicknamed Napper's Nipper, something I know I'm going to regret letting people know about. I have vague recollections of mid-afternoon of a Sunday, toddling behind the bar with my dad, walking around with a glass of ice and plonking cubes into people's glasses when they asked. A few years later, my brother and my only sibling was born and I was due to start school. So my parents, faced with the possibility the dreadful possibility of having an American for a son, wisely moved home to Ireland, where I quickly started school. Although I didn't know it at the time, being named after a book character kind of fated me to love books. I really strongly remember a TV show called The Magic Box. That was a preschool show to get kids into reading, and it worked a treat on me. Check the show notes for a link to the opening credits of Magic Box, because I can still sing it from memory something like 30 years later. Like, it's insane. Soon my parents were giving me those read-along books on tape, where there'd be a beep, turn the page. I loved those, and I had a particularly really good Star Wars one that I adored. And then there was those books as well that they seem to be kind of gone these days, the books that had like a row of buttons on the side, and the buttons are different pictures, so when you got to the picture of a particular character, you'd press that picture and they'd play a sound of them saying their name or something. I really had an amazing Batman one, and I can still perfectly hear the Sneak sound, so whenever Sneak came up, you had to press that button. I started school here in Ireland and lost my American accent in 2 weeks, but little did I realise the boost my parents had given me by instilling a love of reading. My teacher, who was known as Miss McMorland, and I can actually name all my primary school teachers, that's how much of a memory I have, it's weird. My teacher, Miss McMorland, used to get my classmates to line up and ask me for help with words that they didn't know. Reading and books and stories became my life. I loved them. Roald Dahl, R.L. Stine, Philip Pullman, Darren Shan, Owen Colfer, Mallory Blackman, and, like most people of my generation, J.K. Rowling became the biggest names on my shelf, as well as all the typical children's classics. I particularly love Treasure Island. It's one of my favourites, still. But soon enough, reading wasn't enough for me. I wanted more. So when I was 12 and read about a story competition for under 13s, I think it was something, it was tied to Bram Stoker or Dracula, I think. I thought I'd enough reading experience that I was ready to write. So I wrote for the first time ever. The first story I wrote, and I can't remember the title, was about a boy who was half vampire and half human. His dad was human and his mom was vampire. And he never knew who his vampire mother was, and ended up facing her in the great human versus vampire war. The only line I can remember is when the son was fighting his mother, he stabs her with a wooden stake, trying to kill her, not knowing it was his mother. And he missed, she smiled and said, "A little to the left, child." So can you tell I was obsessed with Buffy the Vampire Slayer? I didn't win, but that's okay, because I caught the bug. I went through most of my earlier teens writing short stories just for fun, but mostly to get out of doing homework. I had a teacher who was more than happy to read a short story instead of a CV. I started to do some stage acting, something I didn't really talk about until the episode before this. I remember the exact moment that I thought teaching was a potential career as well. I was about 17 and I was heavily involved in a youth volunteer group called Localize, which is organised by the Peace Corps. It's still running all over the world, I think, and Ireland. We had run an art competition and hired out the local theatre. The woman who helped with the youth group had a young daughter, like she was a toddler, and she ran out the door and out of the building. One of the other adult volunteers ran after her and I helped. I caught the child, lifted her up in a playful "haha, I gotcha" kind of way, and she was busting out laughing. But what stuck with me was that the other adult volunteer just said, "Oh, okay, thank God you're okay with kids." And that one throwaway comment, which I'm sure the woman who said it doesn't even remember, set me off on a path. Yes, actually I am good with children. Maybe that's something I should consider. So 2 years later, I was in college, studying primary school education. Now, I'm not saying that a throwaway comment changed my life, but I am saying that sometimes when you see someone with a talent or a flair for something, tell them. You never know what minor compliment can stay with someone for 15 years or more. By the time I had finished college, writing really had fallen away from my day-to-day life, but the dream to be a writer hadn't. But then something changed. My boyfriend, who I'd been with for 4 or 5 years at the time, had a severe and life-threatening illness. He was in hospital for 3 months, and although he's okay now, it was a really life-changing event for him and for me. It was definitely the hardest thing we've ever been through as a couple, but we came out the other side stronger. About a year after this, we were talking about the future, our future as a couple, his future as an individual, my future as an individual. So I kept saying, well, when I'm a published author, I'll do this, and when I'm a published author, I'll do that. And he rightly said, Connor, you always talk about writing, but you never write. And as much as I'm not happy to say this, he was right. Thankfully, he doesn't listen to this podcast, so he'll never know I said he was right. So, I got to writing. When it comes to writing, I've been dipping my toe into all sorts of genres. I had the fantasy world of Hema, with nations such as Remeloth, Missidio, and Falamir. I had written the horror stories The Green Smile and Red. Funnily enough, about The Green Smile, actually, The Green Smile was almost identical to the really famous short story The Yellow Wallpaper, which I studied in college, actually. So The Yellow Wallpaper was written in 1892, and I'd never read it or heard of it. And when I was, I want to say, 14, I wrote a story called The Green Smile, which is exactly the same plot as The Yellow Wallpaper, but instead of it being yellow wallpaper, it was, you know those glow-in-the-dark stickers you stick on your ceiling when you're a kid? And it was a crescent moon that was slightly ripped, so it looked like this creepy smile, and the child that was looking up at it had some sort of psychosis or psychotic episode and just always looked at the green smile and all this kind of thing. So there you go. I had the same thought as someone who did in 1892. Other writing things I tried, I even tried to write the novelization of my favourite video game, Final Fantasy VII. I was so obsessed with the story that I desperately wanted my friend, who hated video games, to experience it. So I actually started playing it again and writing down every single line of dialogue just so I could get it accurate, just so she could experience the story. I didn't get that far in the game, and I don't think she ever even read a single bit of it. But you know what? It showed how much I cared about writing, didn't it? So in 2014, after deciding I really need to write, I came up with the idea for a YA book about self-acceptance and the damage that organized religions could do, and repairing father-son relationships after the death of a mother. But all of it was through a werewolf lens, because of course it was. I had characters floating around in my head, I had particular scenes ready, but then I never actually made the time to write. So that's when I started listening to the Creative Pen podcast. Now, you might remember a few episodes ago, I had the host of the Creative Pen, Joanna Penn, on, and we talked about podcasting and stuff. I really recommend that. It's a really good episode. But I tricked myself by listening to it all the time that I was an author now. Just I'm listening to a podcast. I wasn't writing, but I was listening to a podcast, so therefore I'm an author. So then in October, I came across something called NaNoWriMo, or National Novel Writing Month. It's a challenge that you have to write a 50,000 word manuscript by writing 1,600 words every day for the month of November. So I attempted it and made it, even though I decided to do it on October 31st. So by the end of November 2014, I had written a full novel. But I did what I shouldn't have done. I printed it out, I set it aside, and I never looked at it again. Really, really silly mistake. I should have kept going when I had the momentum. Now, I know one listener asked in the Q&A what's on my writing bucket list, and to be honest, this werewolf story is definitely up there. I really want to return to make an actual proper effort in finishing the story, writing it properly. I've written three novels now. I know I can do it better, so I'm going to come back to it someday. The writing bug had caught me again, and over time, I planned, prepared, and wrote my first published novel, The Longest Night. I pulled inspiration for it from all over my geeky interests. There's references in there to the Uncharted video games, to Avatar The Last Airbender, to Indiana Jones, Stranger Things, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and so much more. I took all my interests, even non-geeky ones like megalithic tombs and Stone Age Ireland and art history, put them in a mental blender, and planned that book to the final letter. So there you have it. I'm a planner, not a pantser. I use a software that is now available for free, even though I paid for it at the time, called Snowflake Pro, and there'll be a link to that software in the description of this episode. So the Snowflake method is really an interesting way of planning. So it's inspired by the idea that if you catch a snowflake and look at it, it looks fairly simple, right? It's just a snowflake. But then you put it under a microscope and you zoom in and you see beautiful fractal detail. Then you zoom in further and there's more detail, and further, seeing more and more detail. So when planning my book, that's what I use. The snowflake method starts you off with a one sentence summary of the entire book. Yep, one sentence. One sentence to help you boil your book down to its purest form. For example, three strangers must come together to stop a madman from acquiring incredible and indescribable power. This is the one sentence summary of The Longest Night before I wrote it. Simple, easy to understand, and boils the book down to its barest of bare bones. But then, like a snowflake, you zoom in. I expand the one sentence into a basic five sentence paragraph. A sentence to give the background, three for the main events, and a sentence to summarize at the end. Then you zoom in. I take each of these five sentences and make them paragraphs themselves. I continue this process over and over again until I'm zooming in and zooming in, and I get to the point that I know zooming in any further won't give any detail, won't give any inspiration, won't be worth it. I also go over and back between this process and the same kind of process for the characters. At the first point, I just start with a list of potential characters and a simple one-word summary of their personality. Then I zoom in and summarize their wants and their needs and how they change over time, all that kind of a thing. And then I zoom in even more and I get their background, their personality, what makes them tick, and then boom, I have a book. So, as if I didn't have enough on my plate, I decided to start a podcast. A good few years ago, around the time I actually started taking writing seriously, two friends and I attempted to start a podcast. We were trying desperately to be this like geeky news opinion chat type of show. And it was a lot of fun. We did maybe 10 or 11 episodes and we just had to quit. We found we were purposely not socializing and not talking to each other about the things we normally did, because we'll save it for the podcast, which is not a good way to have a relationship with friends. I've been listening to podcasts very intensely for a very long time. Like, I've been listening to podcasts since you had to download them onto a desktop computer, then plug your MP3 player into the computer and then transfer them over. That's how long I've been listening to podcasts, and I love them. But again, like how my love of reading made me want to write, I felt the need to create. Book marketing is hard, and ads for ads' sake just didn't sit right with me, plus really difficult and complicated, so I wasn't looking forward to doing it. So I decided to focus on content marketing. Content marketing is where you create something people would enjoy for free, with the idea that you're raising awareness of you as a brand and you're getting people interested in other things you do. So for example, I create Story of a Storyteller, I interview people and talk to them, and then hopefully listeners will be like, hey, I like this guy, what's his book like, and buy it. That's the idea. But what to create? I knew I wanted to do content marketing, but what? I wanted to do something funny, something eye-catching, something that would draw people in. My very first idea was to do a comedic show about writing, where an author and I would talk about the silly mistakes we both had made in the past, constantly showing instead of telling, constantly using adverbs, constantly using the same word in a sentence. You get the idea. But here's the thing. Much to my surprise, authors don't want to mock themselves in a public forum. Fair enough. Then lockdown 2020 hit. I had more time to read, more time to write, and I was writing a children's fantasy book, which I'll get to later. I just finished reading Coming About, a memoir written by Mario Delolio. It's a fascinating story, and if you want to hear more, you'll need to go all the way back to season 1, episode 3 to listen to it. But I was following Mario on Twitter and saw he was going to do a Facebook Live video for some online book festival or something. I can't remember the exact details, but I remember watching it. He read a bit from his second book, Body and Soul, and I typed in a question in the chat box asking, how does he combine his faith in God alongside being gay in a religion where being gay isn't allowed, blah, 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 something really in-depth and over the top. And the second I typed that question in, I saw another question pop up after it saying, what's your favourite colour? So maybe I went a bit too deep and a bit too heavy, a bit too quickly. But I remember when Mario read my question, he said, oh, wow, great question, Connor. And he answered it. And again, a throwaway compliment stuck in my head. I do ask good questions, actually. Soon after, maybe only a week or so, Chris Agate, a host of the Writing Community Chat Show, tweeted saying, "As a podcast host seeing a lot of authors coming on the show and on other shows, it makes me wonder why, as an author, I've never been on a podcast show myself." I took this as a sign, and I bit the bullet, announcing I was starting a podcast and looking for authors as guests. And I found 10 guests very quickly, which is quite shocking. Imagine that, authors eager to plug their book, who would have known? And then started the hard work, figuring out how to actually do it. I mean, I'll interview them, but I didn't know what kind of slant I would go with. There was the stress of, do I have to read all of their books to interview them or not? And I was like, I don't have the time for that. I'm a slow reader. So I had to figure it out. So this is the process that I have developed now over a year. So first of all, I run the podcast in seasons, 4 seasons a year, one starting in the first Monday of January, one starting the first Monday of March, of April, one starting the first Monday of July, and one starting the first Monday of October. So one for each season. And all I'm looking for in a guest is an author who has an interesting story to tell, whether it be a life story or how they got published or what they're doing with their career. And nowadays I find my guests on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, but more often than not I actually use services like matchmaker.fm or podmatch.com. So if you're an author listening who wants to get on more podcasts, I really recommend you get a profile on them. Matchmaker I've been using longer, but I kind of like Podmatch a little bit more, but they only let you to potentially match with 2 podcasts at a time. If you're more interested in that, please hit me up on Facebook. On Facebook? Don't hit me up on Facebook. I don't use that. Use Instagram or Twitter. So Matchmaker and Podmatch are essentially 2 social media sites that are for podcast hosts to find podcast guests. You fill in a profile, tell others what type of topics you're interested in speaking about, and go from there. I'll often also reach out to authors I'm inspired by or look up to myself. Like I had Joanna Penn on, which was a huge thing for me personally. And that was just purely from giving it a shot and emailing her, and she said yes. So the actual process. Once my guest and I have confirmed that yes, they are going to be on the show, the first step is picking a time and date. That's actually a lot harder than you think. First, we have to find a day that's free, then find a time that's free, and then do the worst type of maths possible, time zone maths. However, I did find a really useful app for that. I can't remember the name of it, but it's time zone comparison app, something like that. But then the other thing is, not everyone calls their time zone the same thing. So some people, I'll ask, hey, what time zone are you in? And they'll say, I'm in Denver. And I'm like, what time zone is that in though? And it's easier just to look it up yourself afterwards, but it's a pain. But anyway, so once we have a time and date, that's the start of the research phase. Depending on the guest, this can be over very quickly or take a long time. The only reason it'd be quick is if it's a guest I'm already very familiar with, or if I've read their book, or if they have a really strong about page on their website, because that's where I always start with the website. I have a quick scroll through, look for an about page, look for a contact page, just see what kind of things they're saying about themselves, then move on to things like social media, or even watching and listening to previous episodes of other podcasts that they have guested on. My number one goal is always to find out what questions they've been asked before, and then avoid them as much as possible while still asking the really common ones, so that my audience, that's you guys, will actually want to hear the answers too. Because that's the thing, you want to kind of get a balance. You want the guests to be interested and engaged, but you also want the audience to feel like they're getting to know them. Once I have the questions done, a process I've become quite adept at, thankfully, I'll type it all out in a Google Doc. It used to take me 3 hours to decide on questions for a guest, but I have it boiled down to like 45 minutes now. I don't think I can get faster than that. So I'll usually send them a Google Doc along with a Zoom link to the guest, usually a day or two before we record, which is a handy way of confirming, because sometimes I have set dates, recording dates, 2 months before we actually go ahead with the recording, so it's nice to do it that way instead. Then when it comes to recording, I'll say, we'll start the Zoom call, I'll say hi to my guest, we'll check microphones work, sound works, internet's okay, and have just a general catch-up, warm-up chat. I often ask if they're happy with the questions, and if there are any questions I didn't ask they would like to discuss. That's a really good tip for if you're interested in being a podcaster, because a couple of times now I've said, hey, is there anything you want to talk about that I didn't ask? And they'll say, well, actually, yes, I have an identical twin who is also an author, you know, something like that come up, and you're like, wow, didn't know that, that's great. That actually hasn't happened to me, but still, you get the idea. And then we hit the big red button. So once recording is over, we'll have another chat to discuss when the episode airs, and then I relax. Usually I have to go into the other room and thank my boyfriend for keeping our dog quiet, which I think causes him more stress than me interviewing causes me stress, but hey. And then in the build up to the release, I record an intro and an outro, edit the lot together, upload to Buzzsprout, and done. The podcast has been amazing. Although there are times I've considered dropping it, it is a lot of work and it does take a lot of time away from my writing. It's something I am proud of in its own right. What was supposed to start as a way for me to market myself has become a body of work separate and is I'm very proud of. I can't wait to see what happens next. Speaking of... Now I'm looking forward as well as looking back, and I find myself asking, what do I want? The boring and basic answer, be happy. I know that's very cliche, but it's the honest truth. I don't want to do things that stress me out. I don't want to be under pressure all the time. But I also want the podcast to keep going. I want to write and publish good stories and books. I love teaching and cannot dream of giving that up. Once upon a time, I used to get really down when the podcast didn't have a great week in terms of downloads, or when weeks would go by and my book wouldn't sell a single copy. I'd be depressed that I couldn't squeeze the time out to write, or I didn't make time to walk my dog. I have big plans and small plans for the future. Some are wishy-washy and uncertain, others are definitive and set in stone. The important thing is, though, I have decided it doesn't matter what other people think of my work, it only matters what I think. If I can sell one copy a month, I'll be delighted with that, because that means somebody else agrees that yes, my book is good. In terms of writing, I have too many projects in my head. I have a writing bucket list, so like I want to return to that Werewolf YA book I mentioned earlier. But before that, I want to finish the sequel to The Longest Night and the two books I've planned after that, making a closed four-book series. I want to take the children's fantasy I've written and polish it off, creating it either a two-book or three-book series. I'm not quite sure yet. Again, open invitation to anyone interested in reading a middle-grade fantasy book and helping a writer out. I'm looking for someone to have it read so I can discuss with them, is this two books or three books? Anyway. I'd love to publish my adult series independently, because that's just the way I prefer for it, because I don't think a publisher would publish this kind of weird action-adventure supernatural thriller starring gay characters thing. I don't think a publisher would think it would sell. But then I would love to have my children's book published traditionally. I have a dream publisher I'd love to get, but I'm not going to say that out loud until it's actually a possibility. For the podcast, I just want one thing, for it to grow. I think this is a brilliant show. I think I have so many amazing authors and storytellers and guests on it, and I want people to meet those people. I want it to reach the audience that my guests deserve, is the way I kind of think of it. So growth on the podcast is slow, but it is growing. The way I kind of look at it is in 2020, I had 1 week where I had zero downloads. So that's 7 days with not a single download. Whereas in 2021, that's never happened, even though the podcast did take a dip at one point because of I stopped recording episodes when my grandmother passed away. So the thing is, growth, like all growth, it will spike, it will dip, but it will continue. And as long as people like you continue to find, listen, share, and review, this podcast will continue to grow. I think that's it, but there are some questions I want to go over, so here we go. So here is the Q&A section of the show. I had a couple of interesting comments and tweets and everything from Instagram and Twitter and Patreon. So here we go. First up is Laura Hand, who is one of my patrons. She asked, if I could be any character in Alice in Wonderland, which would it be and why? Well, I'm a bit offended that she didn't know that the answer would of course be the Mad Hatter. I love the Mad Hatter. He's the most interesting, the most bizarre, the one that always stood out to me. Also, something, there's a little extra thing there. So there's a podcast I listen to called S-Town. It's a documentary podcast and it's fascinating. It's I highly, highly, highly recommend you track it down and listen to it. And it's linked to, I don't want to spoil it because it's an amazing story, but it's linked to the Mad Hatter because of something called mercury poisoning. So hatters in the time that the book was written used liquid mercury to shape and stiffen the felt to make it into hats in whatever way that you would want. And basically hatters would often get mercury poisoning from handling it so much. So as a result, then a Mad Hatter became a common thing, and that's where the Mad Hatter came from. So there you go. Next is a comment from at the Writing Druid on Instagram. This was mostly at the Writing Druid is actually Chelsea. Chelsea was a previous guest. I highly recommend her story because it was really interesting to hear how someone with dyslexia overcome it and become a writer. So she asked me a couple of questions. So the first one is, what is my favorite part of D&D? So even though I answer this on Instagram, I will tell the story here for the listeners. So for those who don't know, Dungeons & Dragons, or D&D, is a tabletop role-playing game. People play through a story together, creating it as they go. One person acts as the Dungeon Master, or the DM. Their role is kind of halfway between a narrator and a referee. They also create the world and the plot hooks for the other players, who play the main characters of the story, to react to investigate, to follow. My favourite part of D&D has to be that the emotions that can be conjured up are so realistic sometimes. One of my player's characters, for example, was married to a fictional character, obviously. And within the game, her husband jumped between her and a deadly spell that was thrown at her and died in her stead. He literally sacrificed himself for her. And I'll never forget the look I got from my player. She just looked up at me. I was standing. I usually stand up when I'm DMing. I was standing, she just looked up at me and there was tears welling in her eyes, and it got to me and then I welled up a little bit. I think it's just amazing that, you know, I'll never forget looking at the player as she welled up, upset over the death of her fictional husband. It's an amazing game, and if anyone ever offers you the chance to play it, leap into it with both feet and eyes closed, because you'll never forget it. Even a bad game, you'll still have fun. Chelsea also asked, how do I deal with writer's block? So I'm very lucky in that I've never dealt with true writer's block. Block isn't just sitting at the screen going, oh, what will I write for an hour or two and then writing. True writer's block is not having a clue what to write for weeks and being well and truly stuck. So however, when I have those days where I am stuck, I just skip the scene that I'm stuck on and write the one I want to write. I've also written lists of what won't happen next, because that's weird, I know, but sometimes even just getting your mind turning and the gears going and, you know, getting a bit of a flow of writing, well, this isn't going to happen and this isn't going to happen and this isn't going to happen, then all of a sudden, oh, actually, maybe that could happen. Actually, that's interesting. And there you are. Occasionally, sometimes I actually also bring the dog for a walk and that just clears my head. Sometimes the worst thing you can do is sit and stare at a blank screen. My next question is from another Patreon, Eve Power, also known as Dixon Rule, who has been on two episodes. Hi, Eve. She wants to know, how do I deal with the pain of being a culchy bogger living in the big smoke? And yeah, there's no pain greater. So culchy, for my American listeners, which is most of you, by the way, culchy is a slang term used by people in Dublin for people who grew up outside of Dublin. It's kind of a country person. It's someone who, you know, was on a bog once before or that kind of thing. And it's very often jokingly an awful trial to be a culchie in Dublin, but really it's not. Next is a question from Kevin Doyle at Kevin D. Writer on Twitter. Kevin said, I would love to know the beginnings of your podcast, how the idea came about, and what made you finally do it. Well, I think I've said that earlier. Also, which guests have taught you the most about writing, and any tricks of the trade you've learned from them, please share. So, honestly, I've had, let me get this right, 10 guests in season 1, 10 in season 2, so that's 20, 8 in season 3, so that's 28. Then I had seven new guests in this season, because Julie, Qian, Julie Wang, and Dixon Rulebook came back, and then I'm not a guest. So that's, how many is that? That's 35. Is that 35? Wow. 35 guests I've had. It's very hard to remember all the different tips they've all given me. But the one thing that I've seen happen is when something comes up that's relevant, a bit of advice that came from one of my guests would pop back into my head. So for example, in season 1, Sarah Webb said, the biggest mistake people make when submitting things is submitting them too early. I'm currently trying to make a big decision with my children's fantasy book, and those words are ringing in my ear. It's too early, maybe I need more time with the book. I'm trying to make a big decision with it, and those words of Sarah's keep ringing in my ear. Eve, or Dixon Rule's question, asked, what's your main quest? So what is it that, when it comes to having another career, you know, writing, podcasting, what is the main thing I want to do? That's always in my head too. If you can only do one thing, what is that one thing? A lot of Joanna Penn's advice of sticking with the podcast, of being willing to change things, take risks. Hey, this solo episode is a risk I'm trying out. It's something different. So trying that on. Chris Agate advising to write what you want to read was hugely helpful for me. I used to focus a bit too much on, well, this wouldn't sell, and then I decided, don't, you know what, write what I would read, and if a publisher won't take it, I can publish it myself. These are just the ones in my mind at the minute, but when I need to remember things other people said, they always seem to come to the fore. Kevin Doyle also asked, if I was to sell my voice, how much would I get for it? Well, if Ursula is selling, it would be a pair of legs. Chris Agate, who was my very first guest to air, asked, who is my favourite band or singer? Well, I have a very bland acoustic taste in music. Suzanne Vega would be my number one answer straight away. You'd know the song Tom's Diner, you know, that one. And Luca, Marlene on the Wall, she's just brilliant. I love her. I've seen her live once. It was the first concert me and my boyfriend went to together, actually, and it was just amazing to get to meet her. I love her, and I love her music. Elliot Smith is another singer I love when I want to get good and depressed, which is important too. You need to have your downs as much as you need your upsides. There's an Irish band called the Guggenheim Grotto, now called Story Man, that I love. The Cranberries, of course, Hozier. There's also a singer composer Irishman with a big red head in him called Colin McGuinness, who is incredible. And considering I mentioned D&D earlier, he actually composes some music for probably single biggest D&D show, Critical Role. He's composed some music for them, so look him up on YouTube. He's an amazing singer. And I also have a guilty pleasure of loving Todrick Hall and some, but only some, of RuPaul's music, believe it or not. Halo Scott, previous guest and friend of the show and patron, said, what's the hardest part of switching between genres and age groups? Whew. Well, this is the thing, I don't really find that difficult. I think of it more like I'm switching from one story to the next instead of genre. So the story you want to tell will inform the characters will inform the style of writing. So when I'm writing my adult supernatural thrillers, I'll write characters that are adults, that are willing to put themselves in danger and react in a particular way. There'll be cursing, there'll be violence, there'll be fear, there's the occult, there's, you know, a lot of dark stuff there, because adults can handle that. But in my children's books, the characters are children, so there's no cursing, and there is a tinge of violence and fear and magic, and it's all through a child's lens, so it's not that hard. The hardest part, I think, is learning a different language when it comes to marketing and querying and presenting the book. Halo also asked for Irish lessons, so Ciachtaí Gaeilge, Ciach a Leabhar, so short three frasí chuid. So first, hello. Hello is very easy. It's two words. It's Dia Ditch. So Dia Ditch. Dia Ditch means God with you. But what's interesting in Irish, I'm sure this is in other languages, when someone says hello, you don't say the same hello back. You have to say an extra bit. So it's Dia Ditch when you start, and then the response is Dia Ismura Ditch, God and Mary with you. So it's just an interesting thing. Next, if you want to say I like to read, it's Ismahlom Ave Eglave. Ismahlom Ave Eglave. And then I like to write. Ismahlom Ave Exkrive. Then these two are just for Halo. Where are the goats? So Cawil na Gawr. Where are the goats? Cawil na Gawr. Gawr is goats. And then I like goats. Ismahlom Gawr. This is not something I thought I'd be doing on a Sunday. Interesting thing about Irish, just for everybody, and it's something I love telling people, there is no translation for the word yes or the word no. There's no such thing. So when you're speaking in Irish and you want to, and someone asks you a question, the way they ask you the question tells you how you answer. So for example, if they ask you, hey, did you eat your breakfast today? You wouldn't say yes. You'd say, I ate my breakfast. Or you just leave the breakfast out and you'd say, I ate. If someone says, was he a greedy man? You would say in English, no, he wasn't. Or you just say no. In Irish, you say, wasn't. So it's just an interesting little tidbit and something that really blows kids' minds whenever I tell them that. Anne Murta, who was a she's a historical fiction author for children and a previous teacher, and I've interviewed her for my other podcast, which I'll be talking about soon. She asked, am I planning a series? Yes, Anne, I am, much to my dismay. I have an adult supernatural thriller series in my head that I've talked about, and it's planned out in paper. I actually even have it like, this happens in book 3, this happens in book 4. And then my middle grade fantasy that I've written, I'm hoping, we'll see, will it become a trilogy or not? I don't know. The werewolf book I've mentioned, I'd love to turn that into a trilogy one day. Plus there's the adult fantasy world, Hema, that I built when I was a teenager that I still kind of write a little bit about every now and then. I'm sure there's a really long series hiding in there somewhere. Just, and let me know where I find the time, because I don't know. So yeah, that's it for the Q&A. Well, that's it. Thank you so much for listening this far, if you did. And if you didn't, that's fine. My voice is very annoying, I agree. This episode was very daunting to do, if I'm honest. I'm not sure how many, if any, will listen to it. But I hope that most of you who listened enjoyed somewhat. I know every podcast mentions this, and I know you're probably sick of hearing it. But any support for the show can really, really help. Listening is great, and that's the kind of first port of call. But if you could review the show on Apple Podcasts or just on Podchaser, that'd be lovely also. If you're feeling generous, you could give me a tip on Ko-fi. That's Ko-fi. There's a link in the show notes. Whatever amount you'd normally find at the back of a couch or something that would fall out of your purse and you wouldn't notice, or your wallet or whatever, that is all I'm really asking for. If you're feeling particularly generous and amazing, like Talia Golden, Mikey Andrews, Laura Hand, Eve Power, and Halo Scott are, you could support me on Patreon. Patreon is a monthly thing where you just, like, it can be as little as a euro a month, which is less than a dollar, I think. The Patreon doesn't cover the hosting fees, but it's really helpful. And who knows, maybe one day the podcast could break even and it wouldn't be just a drain on my wallet. As much as I love it, it does cost money. So if you could support me in any way, it'd be hugely, hugely appreciated. In any case, that's it from me. My mouth is dry. I'm running out of things to say. My back is sore from sitting up so straight in front of the microphone. So this is it. If you listen to this episode, thank you so, so much. Especially if you've listened to any other episode of the show and came back to this one. Every time I'm stressed out about the show or feel like quitting, I just think of the regular listeners and I decide, you know what, I'll do it for them. I'm going to keep going. So be sure to tune in next week, the season finale, I'm not quitting yet, as I have a guest returning. Chia and Julie Wong is coming back. I know you enjoyed that episode in the past because Chia and Julie's episode is still the most downloaded episode of the show. So I decided, you know what, I need to get this woman back. Chia and Julie returned to talk to me about her year building up to the release of her highly anticipated memoir, Beautiful Country. We talk about book deals, starting a new law firm with her husband, and why she's now reclaiming her name as Chia and Julie and not just Julie, and so much more. So that's it for me for now. Thank you again, you wonderful person who is listening, and as always, see you next time.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you loved listening to this episode just as much as I loved recording it. If you like the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or over on Podchaser. Until then, be good, be brave, and tell stories. See ya.